Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. It's also episode 200.
Oh, wow.
And it's a very special occasion because you join us for our Game of the Year podcast as well. What?
Just by coincidence. I think that was intentional. I think we decided 200 episodes ago, if we start now... We do it every
in 2023,
but sometimes there might
sometimes
be the
take a break.
But not always.
Yes, it will.
Game of the year.
Perfect.
I'm Ben.
I'm Peter.
And I'm Ashton.
Welcome, everybody. We're going to be running down the top five games of 2022. We've all brought five along. We're also going to be running down James Jenkins as well because he is not able to make it today, unfortunately. Yeah. But he has provided some notes, so he's going to be with us in spirit. And we're also going to be running down the Patreon voted top five games of the year, as well as the most anticipated four. This year, the year of our Lord, 2023, and any honourable mentions that we have that didn't quite make our list or that we played that didn't actually come out in 2022. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before we get there, though, we need to talk about this week's sponsor.
We do. And they may sponsor this week, but they also sponsor every podcast because we literally couldn't do it without them. That is, of course, the alternate universe version of U2, Double Jump. Oh. If they had carried on, this timeline would be all different. And you'd be listening to episode 200 of the Double Jump podcast. But look at us, Triple Jump.
Don't say it.
No. Don't cease and desist me.
We can't go through that.
So no. We're sponsored by me and Ben for about who existed for about a week.
Yeah.
Yes.
And if they'd not been legally served,
they
would be doing episode 200 of the
Double Jump podcast.
Double Jump podcast.
Yeah. Didn't even not get to start jump. The podcast in this.
No, we never got as far as the podcast.
But we did have assets made. I still have all those. I'm sure you do as well on your computer.
Yeah, we did one video and then we did another video where we had judges' wigs on.
Yes. Yes, we did.
We're not sponsored by them.
Okay,
we're sponsored by the love and support of our wonderful audience who helped us get to episode 200 by listening and supporting the podcast on Patreon for just as little as $1 a month, where they ask questions to this very podcast. So
and also get to vote in the Game of the Year poll.
Yeah,
as well.
Also that. Yeah.
Everybody on our Patreon contributed to this, so thank you for voting and submitting your games of the year. To be clear, here's how it all went down. We asked people to submit their top three?
Yeah.
Top three games of the year. Every single game that was mentioned was put into a spreadsheet. And then the ones that got mentioned the most were then put into a poll. Everybody got one vote. And then we got a top five from that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we ended up with our Patreon voted top five.
We had 155 votes.
We had 155 games.
155
in the poll.
There's actually quite a lot of games mentioned last year, some of which I hadn't heard of. So
that's great. I think we're gonna get to one of those lesser known ones shortly when we actually start the top five. But patreon.com/teamtriplejump if you want to come along and support us, not just financially, but also in the podcast form by submitting questions, as Ashton said, and also voting in polls and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So do go along there if you fancy. First up, though, we're going to talk about our most anticipated games of 2023.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a top three of the Patreon voted. My script is in grayscale, so the color coding doesn't. I'm
Half
just going to have to rely
on. Half of mine is blacked out.
You're number three.
We're having an
can't
ink
see that.
problem at Triple Jump Cultaholic Towers, and so I'm going to have to rely on you guys to know which ones are yours to read.
Yeah. Hey,
number three isn't mine.
We've got it. Number three is mine.
Okay, what is it, Ashton? Okay.
The third most anticipated game of 2023, as spoken for by the Patreons. Mm. It's actually a twofer.
A two
for one. They were drawing. It's Hogwarts Legacy and Starfield, which we all know about. Starfield, it's going to be big.
70 billion
planets.
You've got time to visit all those planets.
7 million hours of gameplay. And yeah, everyone was excited about getting into Starfield and stuff.
They've recently reconfirmed that it will be the first half of this year. What they're targeting for.
Yeah, no actual date yet.
First
quarter-ish.
It might be part of my most anticipated. I didn't actually put mine in order. My most anticipated.
I just
picked a few games. But these.
Oh, didn't know you'd done more than one. I've got a few. I can talk. I only brought one. But
I've got two games and a DLC.
Okay,
excellent. Who's got number two?
I've got number two.
Excellent.
As voted for by the patrons. It's another twofer.
Whoa.
Wow.
It's Resident Evil 4 Remake and Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
Quite a lot of people are excited about that. I put a tweet up because I've been really trying to get into the gaming spirit. I can't find it. There's nothing I'm really excited for in the next month or so. And a lot of people were talking about Star Wars Jedi Survivor. And
I've been going up and down on that one.
Yeah, I'm just playing through the first one now. And I'm enjoying it so far. Combat, I don't suck at so far. It's not easy. You're just plowing through them. But yeah, I'm interested, but a lot of people seem to be really excited for this game.
I'm now up on that one. I'll wait until it might be one of my most anticipated games. But yeah, I've been going like this. Ben and I have talked in the past about how much we don't like the character, and I also don't like your sort of Soulsborne or Metroidvania style games, and it's both of those. But I'm now coming back, but we'll get to it.
Yes, I am indifferent because I think mainly the hype surrounding the first game is what killed it for me, because I went in expecting this pristine Jedi experience. And for a lot of people, that's exactly what it is. We've talked about it ad nauseum on the podcast. Didn't really hit for me. So I'm not so fussed about this one, but I'll wait until the inevitable hype levels say the same thing as the first, which is it's the best thing ever. And then I'll play it and it won't be the best thing ever. And I'll be a bit sad. Resi 4 Remake though, Peter, I won't want to talk about that right now.
That in a little bit.
At number one in the Patreon voted poll of most anticipated for 2023, it is The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom, not Tears of the Kingdom.
No.
Tears of the Kingdom, which, lest we forget, rather hilariously
announced the day after the Queen
was not allowed to be broadcast about on the UK Nintendo channel because the monarch had passed away.
Yeah.
Tears of the Kingdom.
We were all tearing in this kingdom.
We certainly were.
I wish I was excited for this game. I wish I understood the hype behind The Legend of Zelda, like Breath of the Wild.
Did you play Breath of the Wild?
For like 4 hours and I just couldn't get into it. I tried twice and I just couldn't get into
it. I'm going to really try this time. I'm going
to
really give it a go.
But do you feel like you have to play the first one again?
I don't. I hope not. Because it's really big.
It's carrying on, isn't it?
It is, but the...
I suppose you could just watch a video.
There are lots of lore implications in The Legend of Zelda, but from what I understand, this is a big swing here, I may be talking completely out of my arse, but apart from returning characters and a familiar setting, I'd like to think that the story is just abstract enough for me to kind of get what's going on.
Well, it's usually, isn't it, more sort of subtext and like little, kind of... almost mythological references to each other rather than...
I think so.
I think generally...
It is a direct sequel, so it might
this
be
one
different.
Is, but, yeah. Yeah.
But generally, yeah.
In previous games, it has been that.
I'm going to try. I'm going to give it a go. Because like you, I really want to. I want to be on the Zelda
I want to be in the cool kids.
All the cool kids love Zelda.
I want to sit in the back of the bus with all the Zelda heads.
That's what they call themselves. Linkles.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Ashton. I'm also not like particularly feeling this one, but I don't think I feel that I want to be on the back of... I'm not saying I actively
don't
want to be.
He's so cool, he doesn't
be.
Even want to be part of the cool.
I'm not saying like, don't want to be on that back seat, but I'm just saying I don't feel like, you know, there's enough coming out this year that there's plenty for me to look forward to. Mm. So,
yeah. Well, let's move on then to James's. Yeah. James Jenkins' most anticipated. Yes, yeah. Please.
His most anticipated game of the year is Starfield. Mm. Shocking to no one. Mm-hmm. Not because, and he says, this is what he says.
We've got quotes from the man.
Not himself. Because I think it will be good. Very doubtful at this point. But I'm so damn curious how Bethesda will make it work, or at least how the modders will eventually make it work. Also, I'm a blatant Skyrim apologist, and once this comes out, we might see Elder Scrolls 6 in our lifetime. Maybe.
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 Maybe, man.
I'm with James on both of those points. Yeah. This is absolutely not my most anticipated game of the year, and I love how he's able to say it's his number one most anticipated game of the year, and then basically say, not because I think it'll be good, but I'm curious to see just what
is
they've
this game?
Actually done.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also, I just want everything else to get out of the way of Elder Scrolls 6, which is at the back of, has been at the back of the queue for a really long time. And maybe once this is out, that is what they will actually focus on. Watch them make another two Fallout games before.
Oh, yeah. Fallout 77. Yeah. Get ready. It's coming.
Fallout 101.
Yeah.
Yeah. But my most anticipated game, well, like I say, I have two games and a DLC. I'm really excited for the Horizon Burning Shore DLC for Forbidden West that comes out in April. Got my Horizon jumper on.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, got it for Christmas.
Oh, that's great. Is it the togs connected at the front?
Well,
that's
an interesting it's kind of weird. I accidentally broke it almost immediately.
That's
how it was, but there's like a little ball in there that you're not supposed to pull out, and I thought, what's
well,
that? And
that
I yanked it.
Gotta have that.
And then I had to ram it back.
It comes with a toy.
Exactly. I'm really excited for that DLC. I love that game, and I was thinking about playing it again yesterday. I was just sat there and I was like, man, I kind of want to play Horizon again. But I might wait a bit until the DLC is coming out and do a new game plus run before that comes out. So I'm excited for that. Also excited for Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League.
Yep.
We've got quite a while to wait for that. I think it's coming out the latter half of 2023. But I'm excited for it. It's a lot of what we've seen so far is really interesting to me. I love a good co-op experience. So I'm excited to play that. And lastly, I don't actually know if it is coming out this year. It's kind of unconfirmed, like might be not. It's a game called Paralives, which is kind of like a Sims competitor, similar energy to like building and character creation and lifestyle
Sounds
Sims. And I'm quite excited for that because there's a lot of features in that game that we've kind of been waiting for in The Sims that is made by quite a small team. So I'm quite excited. It's been in development for ages. Mm. And maybe 2023 is the year. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Peter Austin.
It's me. So this seems like a good opportunity to say that my list of five games of the year this year is not good. Oh, it's it's weird. It's just a weird, strange mix. Because I've played hardly any of the like major AAA titles this year. I've been too busy getting a married and getting a house. So I had a bit of a crisis at one point where, do you remember you said some months ago, I can't remember what it was in response to, but you were like, man, do I like, oh, it was after we watched like,
oh yeah, it was like a Sony showcase.
Conference or Sony show. You were like, do I like games anymore? And I know you were being a bit facetious, but you're like, wow, I don't like this stuff anymore as much as I used to. And all this year I've been like, crap. Do I just not like this anymore? What about my job? What's going to happen? Fortunately, there is so much this year that I am so excited for. And I think this is going to be my year.
Yes, it's Peter Austin's year.
It's funny because I feel like the opposite of that.
Yeah, well, I saw your tweet and I was like, that's so weird that like, finally. So
it's my time.
Yeah, 2020 Pete.
I've got exactly that. Yeah. So I've got a bunch that I'm very excited for, but you will have to just forgive my just strange top five selection because there's so many major games I've not played. But so for me, Resident Evil 4 remake, I'm super excited for. I just think like I love that game, that the original game to begin with. I think it's probably one of the best games ever made, not just one of my favorites, but I think objectively a very, very good quality game. So to see them do it in the new style that has served other remakes very well so far is super exciting. I'm actually quite keen at the moment on the idea of playing Jedi Survivor as well. Like I say, I've been going up and down on that game a lot, but having seen the most recent trailer, I'm like, oh, there's some interesting kind of weird references and places and locations and characters and stuff that I'm like, why is that there? And there's like some old battle droids from the prequels that shouldn't still exist. So there's all kinds of intriguing things on there. I think it just looks better as a game, just looks improved. Mm-hmm. And the hype that you talked about from the first game, I think maybe this one will live up to the first game's hype, possibly. Dead Space, quite excited to play, because we're probably going to stream it. I don't know if we will or not, but it's the kind of thing that we would stream. And again, I love the original version, so I think that's going to be good. There was another one, but because I only brought Resident Evil 4
written
down. Was
it Forspoken that was on, or was that?
Yeah, Forspoken, yeah, I'm sort of intrigued by. See, I didn't play this demo that was quite divisive. So, so it's more, it's highly anticipated for me because I've not yet... I've not been let down by the demo. Yeah, I'm still in the state of mind that a lot of people were in beforehand. Obviously, I have heard about some of the drawbacks, but I've not yet experienced them. So that one may well be a huge disappointment for me. But for now, I'm quite looking forward to Forspoken.
Excellent. Yeah. I remember what the other one is that you forgot. It was because it's on mine as well, and that's Peppa Pig World Adventures.
Yes,
of course. Buzzing
at some point this year. I only say that because I got my 250th.
It was Spider-Man. Sorry, I've just remembered. Yeah. Spider-Man 2.
Oh yeah, Spider-Man's coming out this year.
Peppa Pig World Adventures, I'm looking forward to, because that will be my 251st Platinum Trophy after my friend Peppa Pig was my 250th Platinum Trophy this week on stream.
Friends are out.
Don't know. Just kind of want to be. I just want to be amazed one day. I log into my PS5 or my Xbox.
And it's there.
So it'll be on Game Pass, obviously, because it's a flagship title. Everyone's going to be
for
it. Like Microsoft's going to want to lock that down. So very exciting year. I've got a few smaller things here. That was one of them. I'm obviously joking. Lies of P is a game that was announced last year.
Oh yeah,
that is a very
Pinocchio game.
Sort of Pinocchio game. I watched like an extended gameplay thing of that, and I think it was Gamescom where that was shown off, and it looks fantastic. It's very Bloodborne, more so than Dark Souls, I would say, and I'm really intrigued because, as I've said many times before, there's something about Souls-likes that really turn me off because I just want to play an actual Souls game, whereas watching this, I'm pretty excited for it. I want to play that. Ditto for Oxenfree 2 Lost Signals, which is out this year, was delayed out of last year. I really liked the first game, and I really liked basically all of their games that I played. After Party was very good. That was one of my games of the year, actually, in 2019, I want to say, maybe. And big game-wise, Starfield, I'm going to get a base level of enjoyment out of that game. I'd like guaranteed. And if it's buggy and weird, all the better for it.
Yeah.
I'll have fun in that. Final Fantasy 16 is a huge one. Marvel Spider-Man 2, which is supposedly due out of fall this year. And Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth, part 2 of the remake, is apparently due out next winter is what they announced. So it'll either be December or very early in 2024, but I hold out hope for this.
They did confirm that Spider-Man 2 is due out
this year. So
in a blog post, thanks PlayStation.
Really big fanfare.
That's right. No date yet for Little Devil Inside, but
still no.
That was supposed to be 2022, so I've got to imagine that it can't possibly be 2024, right? It's got to be this year, presumably. That looks intriguing.
You would have thought that game has been in development for so long now. And every time we see it, it looks like a completely new genre of game. It's really weird.
And then there's the nice, I always forget the name of it, but the sort of cycling photo.
Season.
I think that's out this month.
Yeah, it's coming soon.
It is out this month.
Oh, Ashton knows. Watch Ashton's new series.
It is.
It's a great series. Yeah. Before we move on to our top five game of the year, we are going to talk about our honorable mentions now. There's no Patreon involvement here, but we can run through all of our games, as I said, that either didn't crack the top five or that we played this year, and really enjoyed, but that didn't come out and in that year and therefore qualify for the top five at all. Mm-hmm. So, who's got James?
Peter does.
Peter's got James.
James, his honorable mentions this year are Tunic, which did come out this year, didn't it? But
fairly sure.
Just didn't make his top five.
When we say this year, we're confusing 2022. Yeah. We're going to do that a lot, probably.
Yeah.
It's so basically the first thing we've recorded since we came
back. It's the 5th of January, so,
Stray.
Or Stray.
Which also came out in 2022.
Or Stray 2, if we're serious about this.
And also Football Manager 2021.
Nerd.
He did give a shout out for his team of choice, but I didn't put it down because I didn't understand it, and therefore nobody else would.
Sorry, James, bad joke.
Sorry, James, don't get it. So that's it.
My honorable mentions are, hey, don't get angry at me. Mm. I already know that people don't trust my judgment anyway, so I definitely couldn't put it in my top five. Saints Row is an honorable mention.
Saints Row.
Yes.
I played a lot of that game, and apart from the fact that the game is so broken that I literally cannot platinum it because one of my trophies is bugged, and without playing the entire game again, I can't platinum it.
Let's face it, you want to play the entire game again anyway. So you'll get it.
I kind of wish I did, but also my boyfriend was like, I am not playing any more of this game. Don't ever ask me to play it again. And I played a lot of that game. And as much as it is objectively on every level a bad game, I had a great time playing
it. It's so bad.
I really
Volition's
did.
Just work in support on flipping Gearbox just, games now.
Yeah,
Or something like that. Citation needed.
Also, Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, I didn't put that in my top five because, again, like I really like a co-op experience. I love the Borderlands universe and all those games, but I just couldn't get on board with Wonderlands. It just did not grip me in any way, which is such a shame because I know a lot of people really enjoyed it and it got quite a few mentions on Patreon, but I just couldn't get into it, gang. I'm so sorry. Also, Power Wash Simulator.
Oh.
Played a lot of that.
Very zen.
And I really liked it. I thought it was a really good game. Made my brain turn off and I would just put something on TV and just clean. Just clean the park or something.
While the pots and pans in your kitchen pile up around you.
Washing. Yeah, and I'm like, washing. No time. I have to clean the park.
Virtual park.
And the last thing, it didn't come out this year, but also kind of did because it got an upgrade. Cyberpunk 2077. Mm-hmm. That was my most played game on PlayStation. I put over 100 hours into that game. And I think... actually really good game, and I'm really glad that they managed to like fix it and bring out the story that they put together in that, and I'm glad that it got a lot of people playing it this year. I do think that maybe they didn't get the comeuppance that they should have got. I mean, they did a bit, but like it's a shame that they didn't kind of learn from their mistakes a little bit. But I think it's a really good game and I'm glad that I got to play it on a way that's not broken.
Completely buggered, yeah.
So yeah, this the upgrade that came out in February and I played this year and I think it's actually a very good game. So those are my on-mems.
On-mems. I've got my on-mems here. Two games that came out this year. Lego Star Wars, I think in a lot of the Skywalker saga, I think in a lot of ways, you know, it deserves a little bit of a mention. For me, it was too big, too bloated, too weird. Like if they just put a lot more of the effort that they put into making a big expansive game into the campaign, it could have been a phenomenal game. What they did do in the campaign was great, but it was just, you know, it almost felt like a bit of an afterthought, to be honest. So that was a real shame. But what they did well, I liked. What they didn't do well, I didn't like, which is a really insightful statement from me there. Dark Alliance 2 Remastered. That's very much just a personal choice because it's the original version of Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance 2 and 1 I really enjoyed. And then they just very quietly released a remaster of that and I played it all the way through and had a really good time. So that's one of them. And then a game that didn't come out this year, but I played for the first time at long last, been meaning to play it for ages, was Inside. Which I played in like spring. We keep saying this year. In 2022, I played in like April or something. And Philip messaged me before I played it and was like, try and play it all in one go. And as soon as you played it, tell me and we'll talk about it. So it's got like fond memories, not only having played the game, but also then, it just reminds me of Philip as well. Mm. So that's a nice thing. So I'll always have that weird, horrible, disgusting game to remind me of Philip Reed.
Yes.
Just as he would want.
He would actually want that.
So yeah, Inside was great. I can't believe it took me that long to play it because I love that whole genre and I'm looking forward to that Bramble World game, whatever it's called.
There's like two that look very similar and from different
parts of the Slavic mythology one looks really good.
That was the one that was a demo last month.
Oh, is that the one you messaged me about?
It's not developed by them, but it's the same.
Similar energy.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. I was going to say one of those games that is developed by the Inside folk or some people from that team, I think came out on Game Pass at the end of last year, maybe.
Right.
The, like the Alien Invasion one at the end of the war.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean
the Nordic Scandinavian folklore.
Similar kind of genre, really, by the looks of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's spooky. Spooky game.
Ben, what are yours?
I've got a few here. Firstly, ones that did not come out
last year. Gears of War, I played through those games for the first time and I really enjoyed those. Shout out to Gears of War. You may not have heard of it. It's pretty good.
It's a pretty indie game.
It's pretty under the radar, yeah. I replayed Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy and Final Fantasy VII Remake last year as well, and still really enjoyed those games. And I hope they make another part of this Final Fantasy VII Remake lark, because, yeah, it ends on a bit of a... They haven't finished it, and they might just stop. They might just never make another part, you know? It may never come out, I'm being facetious.
Oh, right.
However,
I do
genuinely want them to make a second part of Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how likely that is, given that Square Enix is selling off loads of its studios and a lot of its IP. But I thought it was really, really good. And I would like to see more from those characters. And, you know, maybe a continuation of some of the decisions you made in that game would be nice too. Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, I'm also shouting that out because I did platinum it and I played a lot of it. But it's still in that weird new Gearbox style that I don't really connect with as much as I did the older Gearbox games. So I'm interested to see what comes next and how that does. Every Wales Interactive game I played last year, big shout out to you. Never stop making them. We're due for at least three this year.
Oh my God, there's so many coming out.
It's very exciting. If you're not familiar, Wales Interactive are a Welsh-based studio who make almost exclusively FMV games. Which is live action, and then you just make decisions. They universally have not the best acting and kind of the worst characters ever in that,
yeah.
A bit like the Dark Pictures anthology, they all are just detestable for nearly no reason at all.
And varying production values, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is kind of all over the place. But I love their games, and I don't want them to stop. And also, we want to be in one.
Can I be in one, please? So we will come to Wales, please.
Finally, and please don't hit me, Ashton, Horizon Forbidden West, honourable mention to
it. It didn't make your top five.
Didn't make my top five. And I've picked some...
That's made me really upset.
Apart from a couple of obvious ones, because otherwise my top five would just be the most expensive AAA games that came out last year. So I tried to swap a few things around. And
oh, well, you'll make me feel better then about mine.
Forbidden West didn't quite make the cut. I think it's a beautiful game that deserves its time in the sun. And if you're interested in big open world RPGs, it's a fantastic one. So give it a try. But for me, I came away and I'm not really looking forward to the DLC. And it's not really occupied many of my thoughts since.
Oh my God.
Please don't be cross.
That's made me really sad.
I'm really
sorry. I nearly also put The Quarry in there. I've just remembered.
Yes, yeah. The Quarry was just because we've had a good laugh.
Fun as a group playing that.
Yeah, so. Every Dark Pictures anthology game. Yeah. Shout out.
Yeah.
Never Stop. Supermassive as
well. Was the other one the last Dark Pictures this year as well? Was that last year?
That was
vampire one.
Oh, no, that was they tend to release them in October. So
right.
I think that, yeah. This one came out in November, I think, start of November. But usually, yeah, it's like end of October sort of time. Well, there we are. Those are our on men's, as you christened them. Before we get to the actual game of the year, we need to talk about our podcast producers. If you go to patreon.com/teamtriplejump, support us at a certain tier, you get a shout out, normally around weird news in the middle of the podcast. But today, you're sponsoring this Game of the Year podcast. Mm. So thank you so much to...
Nathan.
G.Y. Goliath.
Nexus Polaris.
Duncan Wilson.
Ellie Nicholas.
Erica Hutchinson.
Melody Elbonnet.
Katie Garrod/Jared.
And Gabrielle Philippink. Thank you,
podcast producers.
Thank you very much.
Podcast producers. Now it's time. It's time to begin Game of the Year. Number five from the patrons is...
Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, and also drawing with that was 7%, is Vampire Survivors.
Ooh. Now, Vampire Survivors is one that's kind of... What's
pass me by.
Do they fly? Vampires do fly, don't they? Float?
Some vampires do.
Yeah.
Some vampires. Which
they do
ones?
Big jumps.
Big jumps. It's sort of big jumped its way under the radar for me. I have heard about it and I know that it's super
skulked.
Popular. Skulked.
Yeah.
Sure. Has skulked
so
under the radar.
Cape run under the radar.
Oh.
Imagine I have a cape, it would look much better.
Yeah, it looks
and then running.
It does look fantastic already. Yeah. It's a roguelike.
It is.
Sort of shoot 'em up kind of thing. I think it's on pretty much everything. It's on mobile all the consoles. And I think it launched on PC first, PC and iOS, or Mac, first.
I really don't know anything about this game. Vampire Survivors. Like, I feel like you say, it's really just gone under the radar for us, especially. I've known nothing about it, but it got quite a few mentions in Patreon, such as Robert Golding about Vampire Survivors said, "Have you ever played a game where you feel you'll just go for one more run as you got pretty far last time? Suddenly realize it's 4 hours later and you're still at it. That is Vampire Survivors to a T. Incredibly addictive gameplay loop with a satisfying progression system and world." So, I mean, it sounds good. I wish I played it, I guess.
It sounded like you were going to go, "Have you ever played a game that you had?
It just really serves to highlight the beautiful spectrum of video game enjoyment that exists out there. There really are games for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nexus Polaris also talked about this game and said, "When you just want to turn your brain off and play something retro style and insane at the same time, you play Vampire Survivors. It's easily one of the best games in a while. The visuals are what you'd expect from the likes of the SNES or Genesis with the gameplay to boot. Its addicting nature is fueled by the fact that you can level up your overall progression and character both passively and permanently." Soundtrack slaps, nuff said.
Sick.
Nice.
And as we move on to Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, move my paper around, Robin Mansell said, "Despite its janky build, it's been such a long time since I've had this much fun with a Pokemon game, and I feel the new Mon added were some of the best designs we've seen in a long time."
Dr. Mundy also liked Pokemon, said, "Proof that Pokemon games can still be fantastic, even when marred by awful performance issues."
Yeah.
You played Pokemon Scarlet / Violet.
Yeah, it was your favorite bad game of the year, wasn't it? Or not bad,
My favorite, what was it? I can't remember
the most fun you've had in a...
in a game that runs like absolute crap in ages. Yes, and I might talk about it shortly.
So oh my God, I won't beat out Horizon Forbidden West.
I won't go into it, just you went to my number five. I won't go into more detail just yet. Who has James's number five?
I've got James's number five. James went for Cult of the Lamb.
Man, I really want to play this game. I keep being like, "Oh man, I need to play Cult of the Lamb," but then I keep being like, "Oh, it's on Game Pass." It's not on Game Pass. Why does my brain think it is?
I'll just get it on Game Pass.
James said, "Absolutely delightful mix of Hades-esque roguelike and settlement building / managing your cultists. The whole gameplay loop is so satisfying. The aesthetic is beautiful and silly. Naming your cultist just adds to the hilarity of various situations. Apparently, Sanic really enjoys eating bowls of poo. Played it for 3-4 days straight almost. Couldn't put it down," which says it all.
Yeah, I really want this game. It's got such, like, some people who played it really enjoy it. And I do feel like this is one of the games that I might play in the like down period for me of games that I want to play.
Does it make you really kind of sad and give you quite a lot of FOMO that some of the best reviewed indie critical darlings are, or most of them are roguelikes? They're in genres that you just don't really go for. Because that's how I feel. Because I really want to experience these games, but I just don't really like roguelikes.
Yeah,
it's not really my genre, this. So, although Sanic eating bowls of poo, I'm kind of...
that's selling me on it, to be honest.
Well, speaking of roguelikes, my number five is kind of a roguelike.
Okay.
In that it's the game called Plate Up, which came out a little while ago. It's one of the Oxcast games, and we got it in Humble Bundle. This one might be a bit of a recency bias, but me and MB have been playing that a lot over the Christmas period in December. And I really think this game is something special. I think that it's kind of like a little bit... no one's really talking about it, but I think more people should be, because it's a really good game. It's like Overcooked meets like a, like say, a managing sim plus also a roguelike. Like, I just really love it. You just have a restaurant, you make it through 15 days, and you can franchise your restaurant. If you don't, you have to start again with like different food, different layout.
There's
like
co-op?
Yes. So up to 4 player co-op, both online and local, which is great.
Good stream.
And we could stream it if you wanted to. We could stream it. And I think it's really, really good. You have to really like plan things out. So every day you have like a new set of blueprints that you can either buy or research to make better. And you have to like serve customers. I'm always in the kitchen. MB's always on front of house serving customers, washing dishes and stuff. And I just think it's a really, really good game that kind of is hitting this weird niche that I didn't know I really liked, in that sense of like Overcooked but less stressful, but also having to do other things and think about things in between. There's like a conveyor belt system. You see like people's like layouts. It's this unbelievably complicated conveyor belt system in the kitchen, all to make like a burger. Like, it's just crazy, just a series of conveyor belts and mixers and ovens. And once you get kind of that idea of how to play the game and you have like these conveyor belts and grabbers and stuff, it's like, it's crazy. And it's just, yeah, I think it's a really good game and I really enjoy playing it and I want to play it all the time. So I definitely think we could play it and I think we'd enjoy it. So.
Amazing. That sounds great.
Yeah,
that sounds
that's good. My number five.
My number five, it's funny you say about recency bias, Ashton, because I think this could be down to, partly to recency bias. And I nearly put it in honorable mentions instead, partly because of that. And also partly because, well, you'll see, because it almost didn't come out this year in a sense. The Last of Us Part One. I managed to get my dirty mitts on a physical copy of it over Christmas.
Right.
And I've been playing it. And it probably also helps, in addition to both of those caveats, that I haven't actually played Last of Us Part One, the original release, for years. I've only played it the once, basically, right. Years and years ago. So it's been a long time since I played it. And honestly, going back to that story and those characters and that world and that gameplay, I've just really enjoyed. And I think it looks great. All the way through, I was a little bit cynical through the like the marketing of the how did they do it? They remade it, haven't they?
Yeah, this is a remake, yeah.
I was kind of cynical about it, saying, like, looking at some of the side-by-sides, thinking, is it that much better? And why are they making this? But there are, several... like very obvious kind of vignettes where I can remember how the original one looked and I'm like, okay, wow, like the new lighting is fantastic. And some of the character models are actually quite different in a good way. And playing it with the haptic feedback as well, I really enjoy that. So I'm having a great time with it. And so, yeah, it's a number five for a reason. It's the recency bias and it's kind of a game that came out years ago. But I've had a great time with it, and I think it's justified in that they have done enough to this to kind of make it its own game and to, you know, not have it reserved to honorable mentions, in my opinion. So, yeah, I've really enjoyed that, and that's what I've been playing recently over Christmas, and I've had a great time with it, so it's nice.
Excellent. My number five is one that I mentioned is the result of me shuffling a few things around just so my top five were a bit more interesting. But it is a game I still really, really enjoyed. And that is Who Pressed Mute on Uncle Marcus's
Oh my God.
It's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge, which I've actually ended up playing a lot of this year, because despite finishing it, whenever I have more than two people over, I bust out Shredder's Revenge and everyone picks a Toytle and we just, because it's not a hard game to play and the stakes are really low. So I can give a controller to a family member who knows what the buttons are, but still has to check them to make sure they're pressing the right ones. And they can still understand that you just mash square to attack.
Grandma loves the turtles.
Grandma is the real hero in a half shell. This was made by Tribute Games, who I think were founded by a few people who worked on the Scott Pilgrim versus the World game that I absolutely adored when that came out. And then I played through the PS4 re-release, I think maybe either 2021 or 2022. I'm not sure when it came out. But that was so lovely playing through that again. And this is even easier than that, I would say. And it's not just about difficulty, of course, but I just think it's such an accessible, lovingly presented retro style game. The music is brilliant. I won't spoil it, but there's a boss fight at the end of every level, and there's a boss fight that just has it's just got such a good song. And it's not all sort of like chiptune as you would expect, sort of appropriate music. There's some real original bangers in there.
Wow.
Even down to when you're just going around the level select screen and it's got this ambient beat behind it, and you're in the turtle van, and every so often it'll go with the horn. It's great. I love it. I really enjoyed that game. And I think it will have a permanent spot on my console of choice just to boot up with people and play locally.
Yeah.
And you can play like seven players online.
Oh, really?
It's chaotic enough with four of you running around on the same screen.
And luckily there's no sort of friendly fire or anything.
Do they become other turtles?
Well, there's seven characters.
Yeah.
All right.
There are seven characters to choose
there's
from.
There's not three like bonus turtles. They've just like Van Gogh. Yeah. And,
oh,
you
see,
know.
I would love that. That would be great.
Mona.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Mona.
Like I thought you said
Lisa.
Bona.
No, not
Bona.
Bona
the turtle.
No, Mona.
Yeah, I think it's a great game, and that's why it's my number five.
Lovely. Well, we move on to number four now, and I've got the audience submitted number four. Coming in with 9% of the vote, it's Stray. Or the cat game, if you want to get literal about this.
Meow.
Robert Mansell has said, a clever, well-built game that even impressed my mum, who's quite anti-gaming.
I have an anti-gaming.
Hello, actually, it's mother gaming.
Yeah.
Richard Major says, meow button. That's it.
That's it.
Kathleen Cullier says, I played Stray because I love cats and I wanted to hit the meow button, but I found so much more. It's downright scary at times, which I was not expecting, and the storytelling was amazing. It was such a grim world, but really sweet at the same time.
And Stephen Skoda said, this game was a fun palette, a little fun little palette cleanser. I love the atmosphere of the world and the unique and fun characters the cat encountered along the way. I haven't got my glasses on, I'm sorry. This was a fun game with its short runtime and a fantastic game to play.
I forgot to mention Stray in my honorable mentions because it didn't crack my top five. But I also really enjoyed Stray. Mm-hmm. I was also going into it not really sure what to expect, but I found the sort of it's like a very light version of the philosophical dilemmas struggled with in Nier Automata about what it means to be alive and that kind of stuff. And I just found it really nice.
Yeah.
It wasn't that long. It didn't outstay its welcome, and I think it was just a perfect little game.
Oh, very good.
I really liked it.
I've got thoughts about Stray, but it might be
okay.
Yeah, me too.
Alrighty.
Me also.
We go to James Jenkins number four then, and he gave it to A Plague Tale Requiem, which is probably quite shocking to Ashton and I because I feel like we literally had a conversation of. I haven't heard anyone talk about this game.
No.
It's a good job he's not here. Otherwise, he'd be
fuming.
You two would be fuming and you'd be having a go at him.
Yeah.
James, what the hell?
That game. Lynn let me pass the very beginning of the game and therefore I don't like it.
He got nominated for Game of the Year at the Game Awards and James agrees at least. Number four for James. I know some things have been said about this game on the podcast, but listen here, right? It's actually pretty good. Flawed, definitely, and doesn't quite hit the lofty AAA goal it's aiming for, but past the slow start when more gameplay options open up, it's much more fleshed out and satisfying it's much more fleshed out and satisfying stealth than the previous game. Oh, no, I think I'm just messing that up. And the story, while leaning more on fantastical elements, absolutely goes places emotionally. There we are.
Thank you,
I'm really glad to hear that. But there are too many things to play at the time, and it didn't grab me fast enough, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's really hard. Games really have to fight for your attention these days.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
It's tough.
But aesthetically, I love the idea of both of those games, but it's
there's a bit right at the start where you're walking towards a big castle and it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's like a French countryside summer afternoon.
Yeah.
Oh, it looks lovely.
I played up to like just after that point, so I got to enjoy that very nice bit, and then I thought, let's uninstall
looks
that
great
game.
Without the rats.
Yeah.
Looks great with all
I don't need any
the grim,
mice in
dirty
my life.
Plague
I'm
streaks.
Good.
And then, oh no, here they are.
Well,
they're
not even just like, I don't even mean visually, graphically when I say aesthetically, but I mean just even the vibe. Like, even with the dirty rats and the kind of the darkness and the, you know, all of that together is something that I'm quite into all that as a kind of. As an aesthetic and as a set of themes. But games do have to compete for your time.
They do. I just wish Amicia had like a gun or something.
Yeah.
Just give her a gun.
Yeah. My number four is Disney Dreamlight Valley.
Hey.
Nice.
I really like this game. I think that it was kind of the perfect blend of, I think it's kind of like what Animal Crossing is to a lot of people, but I think I preferred it to Animal Crossing. Partially because there was kind of more to do. They keep adding characters and stuff. It's still in early access, so technically it's not out yet. So maybe next year it'll also be on my list because technically it will release next year.
Okay.
But I really like this game, and I think that what they've done with it is really good. And the way that they're adding things kind of constantly adds kind of new things to do and new things to see, which is nice. And I just think both visually and gameplay-wise and, you know, just soundtrack wise as well, it's just a really nice game and it's just done really well, and that's just, it's quite nice to see a game that's just relaxing. I don't have to switch my brain on. I can just run around with Tony Baboni in a dress and speak to Disney characters and just have a good time. And I like some Game Pass too, so I can just jump in whenever I want to.
And they don't have to throw orbs in tables anymore.
No, so that's good. No, exactly. They've fixed that, thank God. So I managed to get my nice Moana dress. But yeah, I just think it's a good game. And I just think that if for a like head empty, brain off moment, great, perfect. Mm. And I've really enjoyed playing it this year. So yeah, that's my number four.
Excellent. Mm.
My number four, I have really enjoyed playing with me friends, The Devil in Me.
Mm.
Ah. It's surprising. I think the part of the reason this one is like ranked as highly in my mind is sort of in comparison to the previous games,
right,
which were all good in and of themselves. But I think the step up on The Devil in Me, I think, is noticeable. I think in terms of gameplay, I just feel like I'm actually walking around and exploring a world more than I sort of ever felt like it before in the previous games in the series. The characters as well, I found that, like, although I still hate them all, they don't make me angry as much as ones in previous games. Like when we played the, what's the vampire one called?
House of Ashes.
House of Ashes. Thank you. I was just sort
funny because there's no actual house.
No.
There aren't even any ashes.
Not really any ashes.
I mean, vampires turn into ash sometimes.
There were more ashes in The Devil in Me when we nearly got burned to death in the floor.
Yep, sure.
But
did.
We were like, no, we don't want to get burned to death. I want to get crushed to get to death.
That was bad.
Put him in a grinder. Mm.
Yeah, so although you've still got all these sort of annoying people, I kind of think, yeah, but you don't actively piss me off. Like The Quarry, which I know is a different franchise, but I kind of thought they were just sort of a bit insufferable, to be honest. Whereas in this instance, I'm kind of more loving to hate them, really, I think. And I think it's, we've said it before while we've been streaming, I think it's probably the most intriguing setting and premise that we've had so far in that, as far as we're aware, I don't think there's anything supernatural going on.
Mm.
We saw an old woman at some point who might eventually be a ghost at the end or something. I don't know. But
they were all dead the whole time.
Yeah. But for now, it's just a murder man. So although I've not finished it, I am putting that at number four.
We might finish it today, I think.
Yeah,
we might well do, actually, at time of recording. We've not yet done
our
stream.
Watch the VOD, but it'll be on the VODs channel now.
Yeah. So yeah, really enjoyed that, and the social aspect and the streaming, I guess actually streaming has helped as well, and just like engaging with the community. But all of that together, that game has benefited from all those things in my mind, and I've had a really good time with it.
I looked up what you do with the obbles, by the way.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
They don't have an in-game purpose. You use them to buy things on the menu. Like
hats.
Digital, hats. Not hats. Unfortunately, if it was hats, it'd be pretty good. It's literally just like dioramas of various characters and situations. It's not that exciting, which is a shame. We're still going to find them, though. We're still going to look for them.
Going to get those bloody obbles.
Can't not get the obbles. My number four is almost certainly recently bias, but I still would really flipping enjoying it, and that's Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion, which I did threaten that I would be playing for most of the sort of winter break, Christmas break time. And I really, really ended up liking it a lot. It's a game that, because it has been remastered and it's all running on the same source code, can still be broken in the same ways that it used to be able to.
Right.
So there's materia fusion, where you can combine materia, and your materia also levels up anyway as you use it. So you can... And then you can apply effects to it with like single-use consumable items. So I've got a ridiculous... My character has a ridiculously powerful fire spell, for example, that also gives him plus 360% HP. and then I have another piece of materia that applies the effects of the ridiculously powerful fire spell to my regular attacks. But the ridiculously powerful fire spell also happens to have a percentage chance to deal the death effect, which is just an instant kill.
Wow.
So on weaker enemies, I've reached the point where I can just hit them with my regular attacks and they just die immediately. Like, they don't even lose health, they just die. So beyond the aspect of it actually being a prequel and filling in the gaps and all building up to the Nibelheim incident, which is where all of the famous screenshots of Sephiroth stood in the fire are from, where he burns down a town, basically, in the original game. There was just so many aspects that I found really enjoyable, like the breaking of the gameplay. There's a lot of like weird stuff in there too, a lot of hang-ups. The voice acting and the performances, while they have been redone, are not great, probably because it is still running on that PSP framework, so they can't redo the animations because they're still using the same ones. So the voice acting has got to fit in time with whatever they did originally,
right?
Which might go some way to explain why it feels a bit hokey at times. And the writing's a bit strange, where they'll yell each other's names in anguish, or I don't want to go quietly into this good night, and then they'll start hitting each other with swords, and it's just like, oh Christ, this is naff, isn't it? So there's a fair bit of that, but as a prequel to Final Fantasy VII, and as I said in the review corner at the time, the fact that they are positioning this as very important going into Remake Part 2, and considering again that they are changing up and diverging from the original storyline, it may well be that this is pretty much a must play for people who are interested in Part 2, because it introduces characters that may or may not now show up because they're changing things up, and you'll know who they are. So I really enjoyed this game. I highly recommend it, but just be aware that it's got a fair amount of, you know, 15 years to 12, no, even longer than, like, nearly 17 years of PSP jank stuffed in there too.
But I watched really my boyfriend run around a town square trying to get his wallet back for, like, 40 minutes.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
And then try and make some perfume or something. And the mini game happened, and he was like, and she was like, great. And he was like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. I did it first time. I got the trophy for getting it perfect. And it was like complete dumb luck that I managed to do it.
Nice.
There's some strange mini games in it, but highly recommend it. That is my number 4.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
We now move on to number 3. As voted by the patrons, it is Horizon Forbidden West. 13% of the vote for Horizon. Cameron Keywood said, perhaps the unluckiest series in gaming history, with both games releasing close to the Game of the Year winners in that particular year. I enjoyed the story of the game, and the machine design was exquisite. I hope that nothing big overshadows the upcoming Burning Shores DLC expansion, and we can kick Silence in the crotch or off the Hollywood sign.
I do feel a bit sorry for Horizon in that sense, because it has been mistimed a couple of inadvertently. Henry Brody said, Aloy's journey was incredible. The depth of the world and the characters was a joy to play through, and I can't wait to go back.
I'll talk about that later.
You're talking about that later on. Horizon Forbidden West was a fantastic game.
It is really good.
I do feel bad for it. But Shredder's Revenge is better, sorry.
Whoa.
Let's move on to James's number 3.
Yes, James's number 3 was Tactics Ogre Reborn, which I think me and him did a crypt script for when it first came out. And he says, I didn't know what this was until we were graciously given a code. And more fool me for missing out on an absolute classic. Along with Final Fantasy Tactics, this is the classic Tactics RPG. Remake of a remake from 1993 does everything so well, with so many options and mechanics at play for a huge variety in battles. Well streamlined from older versions and an excellent story. And the excellent story is less Fire Emblem waifus, more War is Hell and Nobody Wins. Haven't even completed it yet, so a debatable entry, but over 100 hours in, hopefully it counts.
Nah, not enough, James.
I think that counts.
Scrub.
Yeah.
Finish it.
Finish it first.
Roll credits. You're not allowed opinions until you roll credits.
Yeah.
Blimey.
Wow. Well, I mean, again, it's probably... I don't want to speak for you, Ben, but it's... Well, I don't know. Maybe you do like
well,
tactics
RPGs. Well,
I
will speak for you.
No, well, I might be wrong.
I think I remember I had a couple of tactics games on PSP. I think there was a port of Final Fantasy one. And also, I think there was a Lord of the Rings tactics game on PSP that I remember playing. Right. I was no good at it, but it was Lord of the Rings. And Lord of the Rings is really cool.
Yeah. But I was going to say, you know, again, it's one of those where people are saying so much about this game and it's just not... It's not my... Not my genre. Yeah.
Well, that's why we got Jenkins here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To pick up in the spirit. Pick him up for us.
Ashton, what's your number three?
My number three is The Cat Game, aka Stray.
Stray.
I think this game was really good. I think that, like, I mean, as soon as we saw it, I think everyone was on board because it's a game where you play as a cat, so why wouldn't you be on board? But I just think it was so much more than I think anyone was anticipating. The story was really interesting. Is that whole debate on, like, what is life? Like, what do you determine as a species that should survive? And I just think that the story was really interesting. Visually, it looked really good. And the art style, like the kind of, I don't even know how to describe it, but the kind of different, it's not photorealistic art style was really nice. And the atmosphere that it created was great. Made me cry at the end. And I don't know if they'll make a second one because I think they wrapped it up in a really nice way.
They can't because they'd never hear the end of it from us.
No.
We would just be doing the same impression.
That's true. Stray 2.
Well, yeah, or Stray 3. If you want to be wrong.
I would like another one just because I think I really enjoyed the gameplay and I really liked just hanging out with the cat with a little backpack on. So I really like this game and I think that it deserved all of the like hype that it got this year. And I'm really happy that it came out well. So that's my number three.
It's my number three now. I have brought one along that I was very pleasantly surprised by. Little Orpheus.
Mm. Ooh. Okay.
So I wasn't really sure about where to place this because it was a pretty mindless game. Gameplay-wise. You mostly just hold right, sometimes hold left, and occasionally press jump or action. But it just kept surprising me. And, I mean, I was really disgusted by the level where you're inside a whale and it's got worms. That really, really made me feel viscerally unwell. And I was like, hey, well done for getting such a reaction out of me, game that I didn't know existed until just now. So I just kind of liked the way it was presented, like a sort of cereal, not a breakfast cereal, but a next time on the thrilling adventures of. And then it would like roll credits after every chapter and... You know, it was quite sort of pulpy, really. It was like, it was like a sort of Pulp Fiction silly story. And I thought it was well written. I liked the sort of the way it was, what do you call it? Like they were sort of speaking as you went through. What's the verb there?
Narration.
Present.
I guess the narration. Yeah, the way it was narrated, I guess, is what I was trying to say. Or like the commentary. I guess the one thing that kind of did annoy me is that just how drawn out his story was when the guy who was interrogating him was constantly saying, if you don't get to the point right now, I'm basically going to have you killed. Or
and
something.
Then he goes on for another three or four.
And then he just carried on. And the guy was like, if you don't get to the point, I'm going to have you killed. And I was like, he would have killed him by now, you know. So that was the one thing I was like, what is going on here? It's just an empty threat at this point. But yeah, it kept surprising me with new... You know, you go to another level and it'd be like, oh, it's icy now. Oh, it's, we're in some strange temple or whatever. And I just thought it, for some reason, it reminded me a little bit of It Takes Two. I don't know what it was about it. I think it was just that kind of whimsical, very, very colorful, sort of low stakes in a way, even though it was literally about the end of the world. It sort of felt kind of just like a silly adventure, even though, you know, it, in a way, like in universe, it was very high stakes. But all of that, it was a pleasant surprise more than anything else. And I think that's why I remember it so fondly now, thinking back to when I played through it. So Little Orpheus for me, number three.
Amazing. My number three is Pokemon Scarlet. Now, the issues with this game are well documented. And I will say that, I will repeat, sorry, that as... I will now repeat myself. I did not encounter really any bugs at all. Outside of the performance issues, obviously it ran not great.
I didn't really experience any bugs. I think it crashed for me once. I didn't see any horrific sort of deformations of character models and things like that. I think a lot of that stuff was happening in multiplayer for people, which I didn't play. But as a longtime Pokemon fan who really only likes the original few Pokemon games, this felt like such a breath of fresh air to me, to have full control over which direction I go at any given time and be able to tackle gyms and challenges and that kind of stuff in any order that I want. They really streamlined. A lot of diehard fans may not like this, but the fact that they streamlined leveling up your Pokemon and that everyone gets XP, I found just worked really well with the open world design. Being able to send out one of your Pokemon without entering a battle and just having them fight Pokemon in the overworld, they get less XP that way, but it is a really easy way to level up without having to, you know, it's not as time consuming without having to enter an actual battle and do turn-based stuff. You can just send them out and they'll knock everything out, basically. I was so surprised by this game, and I've only done a little bit of the end game now, which is basically, oh, you're now the champion, you've got to go out there and test the gym leaders you've already beaten to make sure that they're worth their salt or whatever, and it's basically just a harder version of the gym badges. And then it gives you something that's similar to that again. Not really my bag, but I could see people spending dozens and dozens and dozens of hours in a game like this, and it was an open world game that I felt didn't go on forever, and you really could just get straight to the point. And you're gifted with an all-powerful entity that lets you flip in, traverse the environment super easily, which is great. And you can fast travel between Pokemon centers as well without having to use, you know, find all the HMs and get fly and all that kind of stuff. So I just felt as a glimpse of things to come, Pokemon Scarlet and Violet was outstanding. And it shouldn't have been released in the state it was, but I came away having really, really enjoyed it. And that's why it's my number three.
Well, the Patreon's number two with 22% of the votes was Elden Ring.
Oh, what could be number one?
Make it to the top spot. Morlan said that Elden Ring was the best parts of Dark Souls, the best parts of open world games, and somehow, some way, they made them work together. At times infuriating, at times needlessly difficult. Seriously, Melina, was it Melania?
Melania.
Melania, have more powers and passives, I dare you, and at times overextended. The game is nevertheless gorgeous, poignant, and at the end of the day, incredibly satisfying.
Like a Glove said, my first Souls-like experience and the first time I've ever felt like I might not be able to beat it. After years of Skyrim, this has shaken up my third-person fantasy experience. I didn't think I'd like it, but I love it. My first PS5 game also. I don't think I ever stopped and just admired the beauty of the scenery and quality. I don't think I've ever stopped and just admired the beauty of the scenery and quality of the art of the game. That damn tree is beautiful.
It is. It's beautiful. Kathleen Collier said, this game was my first introduction into Soulsborne, and to say I am obsessed is an understatement. I love the lore and the subtle storytelling throughout, as well as the challenge. Excellent game.
Robert Golding said, the best game that FromSoft have put out by a huge margin, that I put hundreds of hours to making a very easy choice. A very easy choice for game of the year. Playing through the world for the first time was a special experience. Taking down bosses in those early days, which has now become legendary within the community surrounding the games. And I helped Barbara Pierce beat the final two bosses all on her own. That was a great way to cap off my playtime of the game.
Thank you, Robert.
And Jonathan Lane says, Elden Ring found a way to take everything great about the Souls games and expand on it. The scale of everything increased without losing the essence of what makes a great Souls game, and I can't commend them enough for that. One of the only games I've ever put more than 100 hours into playing. Mm-hmm. And I've got another one on the next page. Yeah, it's me to read, isn't it? James is number two.
Yes, James is number two.
So we've got James is number two. And James, for number two, voted for God of War Ragnarok. And he says, just wow. You'll doubtless go over it all between you guys, but every piece works so well together. Combat, story, characters, exploration, puzzles, all of it sublime. Maybe even surpasses the original. A very close call for my number one. Real tough decision. Mm-hmm. James.
My number two was also God of War Ragnarok.
Whoa.
I really think this game is quite something. I think that they've really nailed it with the sequel, and I'm so sad that this might be the last time we see some characters, knowing that this is the kind of the second and final installment of the Norse area. I thought it was fantastic. It made me laugh, it made me cry, and I was frustrated when I couldn't beat boss battles. But I just think it's a really fantastic game that looks great. The only issue I had with the game was that sometimes it felt like a PS4 game scaled up rather than a PS5 game that could be scaled down to PS4. Sometimes areas lacked life, and there was towns you went into that didn't have anything really happening in it, which is a bit of a shame. Specifically a dwarf town you go in where you get there, all the dwarves go inside, and then you never see them again, which was a bit of a shame because I just kind of wanted to walk around as a giant man with all these little dwarves around. Yeah. But I did really enjoy the game. I liked the character development we saw. Like I said, the areas were always really nice. The collectibles weren't too annoying and difficult to find, and kind of you had to go out of your way to get stuff. And I just think that it was a really fantastic game, and I'm so glad that it came out so well after how much I enjoyed the first one. So, man, I love Kratos. He's my favourite. Big cuddly man.
This is my FOMO game at the moment. Like I'm not bothered that I missed out on Elden Ring because I know it's not really for me. And actually, to be fair, going off some of those comments, you know, a lot of people are saying it's their first Soulsborne game, so maybe I would really like Elden Ring. But at the moment, I don't have the FOMO for that. Horizon, like it feels too bloated for me to really want to play it. Whereas God of War, I actively kind of just wish I had the time to do it. And I'm sure this year I will probably finally get round to, you know, really, really having a go. But I've just heard so many good things about it, and I've seen such beautiful footage of it, and I just think, yeah, I can definitely see that why this is rated so highly by you and James and the audience and perhaps Ben. I don't know.
Okay. Who cares? Stray's my number two, so...
Did you want to say anything about God of War now, or shall I do my number two?
You can do your number two.
My number two... So in amongst all this chat of Horizon, Elden Ring and God of War, will you permit me to chat for a moment about Pac-Man World Repatch?
Yeah, sure will.
Is that all right? Yeah. Which reminds me as well that I should have put Klonoa as one of my honorable mentions. It was the one I was swapping in and out with Last of Us when I wasn't sure if Last of Us was going to be number five or not. And I must have accidentally deleted it from my honorable mentions. But so that's up there too. But Pac-Man World Repack, surprisingly, it turned out to be one of my most played games this year, which I didn't expect. But I think it was partly because I streamed it all the way through and I played it through at home as well. And then I went back and collected everything. But that was a game that was a remake from the ground up of a PS1 3D platformer, like mascot platformer. I only ever played a couple of levels of that on a demo disc. And I remember thinking at the time, this game is really good, I must get it. And I just never did. And to finally sit down and play through that game in what was quite a nice remake, really. I don't think I encountered any glitches. I think it like controlled reasonably well. There was maybe a bit of a depth perception issue at times, but that was pretty much the only bad thing I could say about it. So as someone who's a big fan of that genre, to finally be able to sit down and play that game and in a modern style... was a real delight, to be honest. If I'd had chance to play God of War and Elden Ring and Horizon, I suspect Pac-Man would at best be maybe number five in my list.
No, don't say it.
If it had made it in at all.
Number two all the way.
But here it is at number two because, hey, it was there for me when I didn't have the time to play those AAA hits. It was just a nice, easy... bite size, if you will, whacka game. And I would honestly recommend it to anyone who's into just that kind of colourful, fun, platformy style. If you've not had a go, you should do, because it was genuinely really good. And that wasn't really underpinned by a huge nostalgia factor for me. Yes, I played a couple of levels, but I didn't really play the game very much as a child. So it kind of stood on its own. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't bolstered by that nostalgia. So that's got to be a good thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Ben,
My number two is also God of War Ragnarok.
Mm. Yeah.
I really don't have much to criticize about this game at all. I just think it's phenomenal, both presentation-wise and gameplay-wise. The story is also brilliant. It didn't bring me to tears, but it did make me choke up a few times.
It brought you to tears.
It brought me to tears
of the kingdom.
Of the kingdom.
He's just trying so hard.
He is.
And he's come so far.
but in the end,
he did an 8-minute speech.
Oh, bless him.
Aww.
Yeah. I just think it's what a way to do character development. I don't think I've ever been so invested in someone trying to better themselves in a video game before. And he really does come along leaps and bounds. And it's difficult to talk about without going into spoilers, so I'll just speak very vaguely. But I was so invested in what was going on, and that is why I think I was struggling so much with the sheer amount of side content that was there as well. Because it's my own fault, because I couldn't not go and do everything.
Yeah.
As soon as it opened up, I felt like I had to go and collect everything that I possibly could. And I am ultimately glad I did, because it was just more of an excellent game. And also some of the best storytelling was in those areas. Like some of those side quests are really good, and they help flesh out already excellent characters. But there would be periods where a big pivotal story moment would happen, and then I'd just bugger off for like 14 hours and just go do side stuff and then come back. And so that took me out of it a little bit. But that's, as I said, you know, that's on me and how I choose to play the game, because that stuff was optional.
That's also one of those things about a game like God of War, where the story is so, like, and the characters are so powerful, and you kind of want to know what's going on with them, and the development and the emotional stuff that's going on with them is so important. But it's also a video game, and you have to also do all the video game stuff, where you have to, like, go and, you know, oh, go and collect these chests or do the Nornir things. And it's like, okay, cool. Of course, this really emotional thing just happened, so can I have a minute? Because
my favorite one that happened, again, without mentioning specifics, I think something significant happens with one of the characters, and Kratos is stood there, like the music's just swelled, and he's sort of absorbing what's going on. And then there's like a hard cut in the music, because he reaches down to pick something up off the floor and looks at it. There's a hard cut in the music, and then a big text box comes up and says, "You've just picked up an amulet. Amulet can answer." And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That's the most video game ass thing to do at a time like this. But those moments, they do not happen very often. And yeah, you're right. I'm sad that we're not going to see more of this group of people potentially. And hey, congratulations for making literally the most badass male character ever and not have him be a resentful douchebag. Mm-hmm. Like that's such an uncommon, that was such a hard line to walk, I think, at least in the track record of video games. I just think Kratos is, he's so cool. I just want to be his friend.
He's so cool.
I just want to be Kratos' friend.
Especially end of second game Kratos. He's like, this guy's just a nice man.
This guy is wicked.
Yeah.
And also the combat's amazing. Mm-hmm. And it feels so good to play, even if I did end up just bumping down the difficulty, because I'm meant to be the God of War.
Yeah.
And I know this is ultimately a skill issue, but I don't feel great about dying.
I want to be the God of War. Stop murdering.
I want to be invincible Kratos. So let me be that. I just think it was a fantastic video game, and any other year it would have just run away with my number one spot.
Well, sure. It did for the patrons at home who voted it number one with 34% of the vote.
That's significant.
It was also the most mentioned, which obviously makes sense
in the first round.
Right, yeah. Tom F. says, loved it from start to finish and couldn't get enough of the side content. One of the best games I have ever played.
David Lever said, only a few hours in and I'm hooked. The combat and the design are excellent, but it's the story that's really got me. In particular, I love Freya's interaction with Kratos. Exquisite.
Henry Brody said, it's a continuation of a great story. I've been loving watching the relationship between Kratos and Atreus develop.
And Robert Golding says, there are not many better sequels out there to already fantastic games. A true journey through a complete and engaging world with a gripping story that I really did enjoy end to end. Can't wait to see where they take the series next. Feels very open to going down several different paths, and I am open to any of them.
Mm.
All correct.
So the Patreon number one, God of War.
And probably on average across Patreon and our votes, it's probably number one overall.
Well, you say that. I mean, it might be. I mean, it depends how much you weight the Patreon votes. But in terms of the positioning of the two games, it may end up being a tie ultimately because James is number one.
Well, true, actually. Yes.
Is Elden Ring.
And maybe someone else's as well.
And it could potentially be Ashton's number one as well. We simply do not know. James's number one game of the year for 2022 is Elden Ring. Of course. Again, might crop up in somebody else's list. I wonder who.
Ashton.
Me. It's me. It's my favorite game ever.
But this is the open world Soulsborne that I never dreamt could work. For me, exploration, discovery, the feeling of progress earned are huge in every one of those games. But this game surpasses it with the best iteration of Souls combat ever. So many options. Has roly-poly sheep. An actual jump button and the bestest lad, Pot Boy.
Do you want to talk about Elden Ring first?
I will. Is my number one, okay. Elden Ring as well. I didn't get as much time to play this when it came out as I wanted to. I felt like I was really far behind, and also there was like a family event the weekend it came out, so it arrived and I couldn't touch it basically, and I was absolutely gutted. Then I got COVID. And
perfect.
I was feeling pretty sorry for myself, and I couldn't really bring myself to do anything. And I was able to put more time into Elden Ring, and I was already loving it at that point. But I feel like all of the Soulsborne games have a learning curve at the start, all of them, whether you're getting used to the combat or the world or the new design philosophies that they put in there. It's a battle of you versus Miyazaki and FromSoftware. As you try to work out what you can and can't get away with. But particularly in this kind of game, in other Soulsborne games, you would grind souls to level up so that you felt you were a bit more capable to move forward.
Mm.
But because of the open world design, you can go pretty much anywhere you want in any direction from the start. Obviously, there are bits that are gated as you go through. But you really can just like, this path looks interesting. I'm going to go down here. And in so doing, once you've spent sort of a dozen or so hours in it and you've really started to invest in your build and the weapons that you want and so on, it really started to come into its own for me as this like truly special game. I've not done anywhere near everything that game has to offer. I finished it. I got the platinum trophy, all the endings, that kind of stuff. Defeated Melania, who sucks. She's the worst. But there's still just so many things in there that are hidden. And then people, you know, the Soulsborne community, perhaps more so than any other, has people who are so invested in the hidden stuff, the data mining and the like bosses that were cut and stuff like that. So this game's story, beyond any additional DLC that they may or may not release, is going to continue for years to come. It's meteoric success in just the general populace of gaming culture is unprecedented. Nobody expected this game to blow up the way it did. I think people expected it to do well amongst its audience, but for it to be everywhere on social media, completely unavoidable, makes this game undeniable. And while I would love an Elden Ring 2 or a game like this, if they did another open world game, I would also kind of enjoy maybe a slightly more pared back experience, like a Dark Souls 4 or a Bloodborne 2 or whatever. Something not necessarily linear, but perhaps not as open. But for a first try at an open world, I'd say they kind of nearly perfected it right out the gate for this style of game. And that is why it's my game of the year.
Amazing.
Well, guess what?
What's up?
I'm giving it its flowers. My number one is Horizon Forbidden West.
Hooray. Top of the podium.
It's no secret that I love Horizon. Here she is.
You're wearing it.
She's right here.
She's there on
your
wrist.
You're wearing Horizon.
I love the first game, and I love the story and the world and the lore of the Horizon franchise. And the second game was everything I wanted from a sequel and more for this game. The story of it was incredible. And nobody, do you want to talk about it enough? Because everything else came out and everything else was so much better than it. But I just think that they absolutely nailed the story of the sequel. With the first game, there was like quite a lot of talk about like where can they go. They set a lot of things up, but there was also things that there was like, well, you can never really do that again because you've finished it now, like this is done, so like what are you going to do with the sequel? But they found a way to to like gobsmack me multiple times during the game that I just, I'm so happy every time I think back about that game, about my, I wish I could play that game again with like no memory of the story, because there was moments which I will just never get that reaction back because I was just so excited or like shocked by what was happening. I think Ashley Birch does a fantastic job as Aloy. And I just think that everything that happened in that game made me so happy or sad, depending on what they were trying to do. I think it visually was stunning. The world was so interesting, as the first one is. And I also think that like the new areas, the new tribes, the new things you experienced were just really well done and like really visually beautiful. Like there's a, I can't remember the name of the tribe now, but there's like a farming tribe that live on like a satellite dish, mm-hmm. and their whole town is up on this satellite dish. And it's just beautiful to look at when you get there. And the world changes depending on the story missions that you do. You can see like the map change as you bring life back to certain areas. And I just think it's an amazing game, and I could talk about it all day, so I will be quiet now. But I just think that it's such a shame that it came out when it did, because it really did get overshadowed. And I think had it maybe been 2 months later, if it had released over the summer, I think it got a much better reaction from a lot of people. But because Elden Ring came out like literally 4 days afterwards, like it kind of got shafted. But for me, Horizon Forbidden West was my open world game of the year. So I think it's a great game. Mm-hmm. And I want to play it again right now. But I'm resisting until the DLC comes out.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny, Ashton, that you say you wish you could forget a game and replay it again, because my number one, I replayed Stray and I really enjoyed my second run of Stray.
Mm-hmm.
So it's now my number one. This was over Christmas, just before we finished for Christmas. I just saw a clip that someone had posted on Twitter, one of the places where you can just curl up into a mm-hmm. and just go to sleep, and it's like a little, you know, a little moment. I was like, oh yeah, that game was nice, wasn't it? And then I suddenly thought to myself, I really rushed through Stray, which I did, because I think I was a bit late. I think I was a few weeks behind. I didn't get round to it.
It was like when you were moving or something, in it.
I think something happened when it came out, Then I was sort of playing catch up, so I just blitzed through it. I didn't like stop and smell the roses. I didn't skip through the dialogue, but I didn't like absorb it. I was just getting all the pertinent points. So I was like, I'm going to give that another go. And I had a really nice time playing Stray for the second time. And I think because I did have the memory of it, and because I was able to kind of look at the wider world and like take the whole thing in rather than playing it again for the first time, I think it was one of those times where going back and giving something a second try, having, you know, you've already got the bare bones in your head, and you can kind of then put some meat on those bones. Ooh, delicious. Mm. I just did a lot more exploring. I like listened to the music more, like the ambient sounds and stuff, and just kind of watched some of the, you know, you were saying about what it is to be human and stuff, and like some of the characters wandering around are really quite intriguing. And I just had a really nice time with it. And I'm afraid I didn't cry at the end.
I cry at all the games.
I didn't cry at the end the first time I played it. And I thought if I was going to cry, it might have been the second time might have got me, but it didn't quite. But it's a beautiful game through and through, both visually and in terms of its story and everything that you do. And I remember saying at the time when I played it for the first time, it surprised me what it was actually about when I first sat down and played it. I thought this was going to be a bit of a fun kind of, you're a cat, watch out, the man from the pound is going to get you or something, the robot pound. But it was, you know, a little bit haunting and a little bit like, oh, you know, and intriguing and what's gone on here. And I did not expect it to be about that at all. So that was certainly a surprise the first time I played it. Second time I knew that was going to happen, of course. But yeah, to just take all that in and really, you know, some of the subtext and the kind of the philosophy behind it, I think was great. And also some of the dramatic moments. Someone mentioned earlier that it was like surprisingly kind of scary at times when you're, you know, doing those those bits where you have to rush through the little doors goblins. And the little blobs are after you and stuff. So all in all, I'm really glad I played it a second time and got the most out of it because I didn't the first time. And it was well worth going back to. So Stray is my number one.
Fantastic.
I have to be honest, though, about last year, I've really struggled to make my top five this year. Not because I wanted to like diversify what I was talking about, but just because I was thinking back about all the games that I'd been really excited for. And other than God of War and Horizon and Stray,
there were a lot of disappointments.
Really disappointed by a lot of the games that came out. And I was talking to my boyfriend. I was like, I just don't know what to put. Like, I don't know what games to write about because the games that I have that I've played and spent a lot of time on either weren't released this year or were just inevitably disappointing. And I'd have to caveat I played this game a lot and I had fun, but also like I was so disappointed, or it was a real like, it wasn't, you know, Saints Row being the prime example. It was not a good game. But like, that's kind of, I was a bit upset when I was doing my game of the year this year because I was like, I feel quite disappointed by a lot of the games I've played this year. Nothing's really stuck with me apart from like the top three that I was easily thinking of.
Stray for me was going to be, it felt like a sort of a number three, maybe number two game. And I'm glad that I went back and was like, thank God I can actually gush about this game and give it a proper number one, because what would have been my number one? Maybe Pac-Man. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, I've really struggled. And that's why I'm like, so not to rub it in your face, Ashton, given that you're struggling, but that's why I'm so pleased to be looking at the gaming calendar for 2023 and thinking there are going to be some almost guarantees, I think, like good games in there. Resident Evil is, it can't be bad. It can't possibly be a bad game. Dead Space is probably going to be okay. There's all sorts to come. And Spider-Man, you know, again, that surely can't be a bad game.
You wouldn't have thought. There's so many coming out this year that were pushed from last year.
And I've got the time to play them at long last. So, yeah, it's been a tough top five.
Yeah.
Here's hoping. I did look at a list of, because I was trying to, I went through the games that I played on the various consoles because you can view what you played. And I thought, are there any that I'm missing? So I looked games that released in 2022.
I did a Google as well.
And it brought up an IGN article from the start of last year saying, here are the games that are coming out.
Right.
And half of them were delayed out of 2022. Mm-hmm. And the remaining, I suppose a quarter of them then, the remaining half of the half were, I would classify as disappointments, games that either completely missed the mark, like Gotham Knights, or games that weren't quite what we wanted, like Wonderlands. So few games last year I felt really hit as they were intended to. Fortunately, at least I think we all had at least two or three that really did hit, but several of them, like I included Pokemon Scarlet, that game has no end of problems. Still really liked it though, but it you're right, it comes with a caveat. So, hey, let's just hope 2023 is it's Peter's year.
It is.
It certainly is.
I'm hoping I'll get some surprises that will really like make me happy. But I'm so sad. The thing I was looking forward to the most this year is a DLC. I'm like, come on, give me something.
I think there'll be some surprise. There were some surprises this year, I would say. But yeah.
You're going to have to mortgage your home and buy a PSVR 2.
I'd have to buy a home first.
Well, do that and then mortgage it and then buy a PSVR 2. That's the easiest way to do it. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And thank you to our patrons for contributing. We hope you've enjoyed this. And thank you again. Episode 200. We did it. Episode 201, returning to our usual format next week. So be sure, if you are a Patreon, to submit some questions. And also some weird news. We'd like that as well. Peter's going to tell you where you can find us on the internet.
We're on youtube.com and twitch.tv/TeamTripleJump. We do videos on YouTube and we stream on both. And when we are streaming on both, we're modded by Lob Rotovich, Trailing Badger and Mr. Black. Thank you, mods.
Thank you.
Hey, have you got Amazon Prime? Did you know that the bundle of benefits you're already paying for with your Amazon Prime includes a Twitch sub? You can just spend it on us, redeem it, and you get all the benefits, and we benefit, I think, financially from it in the usual way. Everyone's a winner. Twitter.com and facebook.com/TeamTripleJump for video and live stream announcements, legacy video content, bits of video game news, and all sorts of other discussions, Twitch stream highlights of the week, loads of stuff. It's all put there by Fraser. Thank you, Fraser. TikTok.com/ at Team Triple Jump is where you can go to look at our TikToks. Ashton's in charge of that.
You talking this week?
Doing them.
Probably will we. Yeah, yeah. I have, my phone's fixed now, so I can actually...
Oh, was your phone broken?
I dropped it on the floor.
Oh, no.
I had to pay to fix it.
Whoops. Yeah. And patreon.com/teamtriplejump. Loads of different tiers there. Yes, you can ask questions on this podcast and respond to polls like the one we did for this one. But loads of other things too. Early access to videos, a special podcast that is exclusive to Patreon, and some real top tier stuff as well. If you want to look at those as well, it's up to you. Go for it.
We have a website. It's triplejump, triplej.map, spells jump. It's very clever, just in case anyone asks. If you want to join our Discord, you can go to triplej.map/Discord and chat with our wonderful community. On Discord, modded by Jack, Joe, Tori, and Hollowies. And if they tell you to do something, bloody well do it. And don't be a weirdo in chat. There was someone being a real weirdo yesterday and they got banned. So don't be a weirdo, just all
behave.
Right?
How hard is it? How hard is it to behave?
If you want to see the podcast in its audio form, why not go to triplej.map/podcast and check out our live stream VODs by going to triplej.map/VODs. We're all on Cameo, including James Jenkins. So why not go to triplej.map/Cameo to book one from us. And also, if you want to buy some sick and cool merch, I have one under here. Here's some merch. Wow. We've got some new legacy work.
Is this merch?
Is this merch?
This one isn't available.
No. You can go to triplejumpshop.com to check out the new merch. There's some legacy stuff on there at the moment. You can get this hoodie in black if you fancied, and some t-shirts and a hat.
And a hat as well. There may still be some baubles.
There may still be for next year.
Yeah, now.
And make sure you're following at Triple Jump Shop on Twitter for the latest merch announcements. And hey, why not tag us and Triple Jump Shop in your merch posts when you make them?
Come on now. Don't leave us out. Yeah. Don't leave us hanging. You can follow Peter and Ashton on Instagram and Twitter and Hive at that Peter Austin and at Scrambled Ashton, and myself just on Twitter at Confused_Dude. We do lists every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, streams every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Thursday being the joint stream.
Blaze it.
On YouTube, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday being solo streams on Twitch. That was harder to say than normal. I'm now streaming back on Tuesdays. James will be back on Fridays. So come check us out on Twitch. Mm. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, Friday for patrons of a certain tier, Sunday for everybody else. It is a Worst Games Ever week this week. We do the podcast every Saturday and the shows are all the bloody time. Come check them out. Why not leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice? It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms and we'd really appreciate it. All sorts of stuff come out this week.
Yeah, it's WGE times two. We got Worst Games Ever and Weirdest Games Ever.
For patrons.
So we've got World War II Soldier for Worst Games Ever, which is as bad as it sounds. Mm. And Demolition Girl for Weirdest Games Ever, which is as sexy as it doesn't sound, but it is.
Proper sexy.
Mm. Big sexy times.
For everyone else next week. Yeah. So you're getting a little hint of what you're in store for next week if you're not a Patreon.
Yes.
Also, Ben, you played every Wii U launch title, didn't you?
I certainly did, and what an uphill battle that was, getting all of those together. Some of them were I could emulate, most of them I couldn't. Some of them were harder to find than others. One great thing, though, is because I had to play a bloody Skylanders game again, is that the Skylanders were forwards compatible, which meant that as long as you have a Skylander from any set, you can use them on any other set.
Did you have a Skylander?
Yes, I did, from the... Which launch game video did I do?
Wii?
Oh, no. This is the first time I'm using it. I'm working on another one now. A little spoiler. I'm working on another launch games video now that also has Skylanders in them. Oh. But I just wanted to say, Skylanders are forwards compatible. Isn't that great?
So great. Wow. I'm so glad they made that whole thing for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Toys to life. We love it. Anyway, that's out now. Every Wii U game. Launch game.
Also out now, I think they're both out, is the 10 best and the 10 worst games of 2022 list. That is not our opinion. That is the objective, according to review scores, best and worst games.
Yeah.
So, hey, don't get mad at us.
We know you will.
We didn't put any reviews online. We just... have our opinions.
We also did an opinion-based most disappointing games of 2022.
You can get mad about that one.
Mad about that as you like, if you want.
So if you want our opinion, instead of, why don't you play games instead of just getting the review scores? Well, if you want our opinions, go do the disappointing one, because that's our opinion.
Well, exactly. I think whatever avenue we chose, people would be cross. Yeah. So this is just the easiest ways to do it. You understand.
You get it.
Well, There's just enough time to thank this week's sponsor once again, Ashton.
That is, of course, the alternate universe versions of you two, Team Double Jump, that made it so that we could make 200 Triple Jump podcasts.
Here's a factoid for those, some of you might remember. It wasn't, our social handles weren't Team Double Jump back then. It was Double Jump Inc.
Yes.
But then I think Triple Jump Inc. was taken.
Too long?
Or too, it can't
no,
have been.
No.
Must have been taken somewhere.
I don't know. Maybe, yeah, it must have been. We wanted to have the same handle on everything. Mm. So there we are. Excellent. What a fun piece of trivia.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening/watching, everybody. Happy New Year. We will see you all next week. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.